Training, okay. So Assistant Chief Inks will be covering for Steve. Roll call, we will not have Mark. Looks like Charles may not be making it. And next on the agenda is current business, Sister City delegations. They will not be making it. Guess we're not totally 100% sure what's going on yet, but we'll find out on that one.
You don't want to know.
Well, I've been hearing, but I'm not sure everything. Okay, we'll go move to the next and presentation regarding First Avenue and Highway 22nd. Bob?
I'd just like to thank for having me come down. I'm Bob Romine, project engineer for the Department of Transportation. And I'm just going to go back and retouch on where we're going. Last year, what we did was we regraded underneath Highway 26 to provide a vertical clearance for trucks for the north-south movement on Highway 24.
You can raise that up, Bob, okay. If you want. There you go.
Maybe.
Okay. Anyway, so I'm here now to kind of go into what the next phase of this project is, and that is going to be stage two, where we're going to do some channelization and improve the circulatory route of the trucks going through the west part of the town. So with that, I'm going to bring up a couple of displays and kind of walk you through that. Okay, this is a part right through Highway 26. And just to kind of walk through, this is the part we did last year where we did the regrading. Stage two on around Highway 26 is what we're going to do is improve the radius of the spur ramp on Highway 24 to provide the turning movement for trucks, improve that. And then the big crux of the matter is that this is a high accident intersection, what we're dealing with here. And I'll go back to the accident diagram to kind of illustrate that point. But what we're looking at right now and what we talked about only a little over a year ago was there's accidents that occur. Mostly they're crossing the north-south and then also the left turn onto Highway 24. Those are the predominant accidents that we've been experiencing at this intersection. Hence, what we're looking at doing is restricting some turning movements. That's why we provided this for the north-south. So we're going to restrict crossing movements going from first over down to 24 spur and then onto Highway 24. We still provide the left turn channelization to get onto First Street, but what we'll have is this right in here, right out, and then right on heading east, and then a right off. And I wanted to just kind of show you what we're doing here because that is a little bit more restrictive than we have right now. Also along with this is that we'll be working with the city on the access management of right here to provide the free flow movement coming through here. So. I don't know if we have any folks for the businesses down here or not, but we're coming and we'll be talking. But this is something that we'll be working with the city on. So does anybody have any questions before I scroll up to the other part of this project? Okay. And I'll scroll up and show the other piece that we're doing. As I mentioned earlier, we're working on a circulatory route of the traffic. Since we're changing the intersection down here at 26, we are now going to bring the traffic up to Aluk Street. And so trucks coming up, they can come down, and then they can make their left on to head west on 26. Or if the trucks, like I pointed down at that spur ramp earlier, we're improving that radius. So if you make that turn onto the spur, they can come up to the intersection and make a right to go east on 26. But back up to here on Luke Street, right now, turning movements are pretty difficult with the way that these corners are at. And there's some impacts to the right-of-way and to the property owners up here. A little over a year ago when I was here, we talked, and some of the suggestions is get the biggest truck you can to make these turning movements. And then this last week I was down here, And we have two design trucks. We have a WB-50 and a WB-67. The 67s are the interstate trucks, the bigger trucks you see. WB-50s are the ones we normally see at the county road intersections. That's usually our typical design standard. And when I was standing here, saw a WB-50 making a turn, and they encroached into the oncoming lane with the current corner that we have right here. So my team is, you know, or my designer, we're looking at, okay, what would be the best fit for these four corners? Obviously, there's impacts to each one of these corners for right-of-way, and I'm going to kind of go through that briefly, too, as well, to kind of illustrate it. But so working with the city, I know that the city is also looking at truck routes through town, and that's going to be part of this project, I believe, as well. It's an integral part. So, and we're just in the starting phases of this, so we're just getting started. We have our concepts, but there's still a lot of analysis to get through to find out what the best fit is for the city. So anyway, our circulatory pattern will be coming up and down and around. We did look at this one. Ideally, it'd be nicer to be closer to the intersection, but we would have had to buy this building out, and the funds are just not there. So that's why we wound up where we're at on the Loop Street. So any questions on this part? All right. I brought this a little over a year ago back. It hasn't been updated, but it just brings a point of illustration of the accidents that occur at First and Highway 26. Predominantly, we only have, most of our accidents are north and south. As you can see, the little arrows are going up. There's a T-bone here or a right turn on the 20, excuse me, a left turn on the 26. So that's basically trying to explain what's going on here. Very few left turn accidents heading east on 26 and on the First Street, and that's why we're still providing that left turn channelization, with a caveat that down the road we'll be watching it, of course, and if the accidents do start showing up with increased traffic or development in this area, then we'll be back talking to the city as far as any mitigating efforts, possibly closing that left turn lane. But for now, it's still intact. So just a little heads up. So predominant accidents are north and south, and then left turn movements onto 24. See a lot more of those, and this is outdated, so I haven't had any recent accidents in the last year. I'm not really have gone back and reviewed them or not, so but this is what's been driving the project right there, and I just kind of wanted to bring that up back to your attention and kind of go back it one more time. Now I'm going to go back up to Waluke Street and kind of just show you the differences in the two different types of design vehicles at those corners. Top one is based off of the bigger truck, the WB-67, and this lower one is the WB-50. So it's pretty obvious that the lower one actually is approximately for each corner, the difference between the WB-67 and the WB-50 is about half the right-of-way needs, you know, more or less. So this one will take twice as much right-of-way as this one for the WB-50. But it does definitely provides the turning movements for the larger trucks. I've talked to the Port of the Fellow. They say bigger is better on the truck turning movements. That's what I got over a year ago from the public. So we're exploring both options, but there is impacts and trade-offs. So I just want to kind of illustrate that. Again, here's this, Pacific Pride or some gas station right here. WB-67 right here. And likewise, I'll just scroll down and show the other impact. Again, about half the right-of-way impact if we went with the WB-50. So, and then I'll scroll over and show the other two corners as well.
Bob, does all of this come out of the right-of-way, or is part of this private property?
We pulled the right-of-way information when I was down here last week. And there is some private property takes it. We'll be having to talk to the private properties. Clearwater, the gas station, there's another like mechanic shop over here, and there's Performance Auto or some kind of a performance shop right there.
What about Clearwater?
Clearwater is the one we did stop and talk to last week, discussed it with him. He understood the project, and his idea was if he didn't have to, because it really does impact Clearwater the most out of everybody. And I'm gonna kind of scroll over, kind of illustrate that.
Sure, their attorney called me today.
Oh.
Hello. Ouch. Oh, geez.
Okay. Here's Clearwater, and here's Clearwater down here, WB 67. This red line, just ignore that. That's just an approximate right-of-way take, which, you know, we really haven't got very far. It's just a diagonal line, so I just say just forget that you can see that. The radius now, if you can see this car, this is all their employee parking, essentially, and customers. This radius definitely cuts into their parking quite a bit. WB 67, not as much. Couple things we're looking at, obviously, is we do have a really wide sidewalk through here. We could kind of get it down to a little narrower standard. I think 5 feet, I think, is the city standards, if I'm not mistaken. So we could save this back. This is the back of sidewalk right here right now. This is the front curb line of the sidewalk. We could save them some room, you know, by going with a narrower sidewalk configuration. The fact that there's federal money, the ADA requirements are in effect on this project, so we really have to watch that. So we'll have to make sure that we hit all those standards. So there's some options here on this the Clearwater. Another thing that could affect it is if the city changes their truck routes, perhaps, and we don't have the north-south trucks come down First Street, but they go over to Broadway and then come down. There may be an opportunity to kind of avoid this altogether. And that's one of those discussions with the city that we'll have to walk through and analysis what works for the community. This is a city project. DOT is just acting on behalf of them to design it and do the construction administration. So this is a key component. To me, this is the biggest hit on the whole project. Did talk to the property owner last week. He understood it. And I know that the city's looking at their truck routes through the town. So this is a key point. To me, this is the biggest hit on the project. This guy gets impacted the most. So that's pretty much the project in a nutshell, and I'm willing to entertain any questions at this point.
Now, that was my thought, is why would we have trucks making a right-hand turn coming from the north? First Street isn't set up for a truck route, is it? Is it? So it is one of our truck routes. Okay. Are we going to be having a couple community meetings?
Any you want. Yeah, you bet.
Okay.
I see the folks here on these corners and the folks down there at First and Highway 26 definitely should be here to have their input on this thing and express their concerns. I really do.
Yeah, because we'd like to hear from them and try to... Wow. Yeah, it's quite a cut there, isn't it? Is there any other questions, comments from council? Any citizens have a comment or question? Larry?
I thought there would be, there shouldn't be any trucks on First Street.
That's a welcome.
Why kind of look for a problem? Number one, the trucks are going to tear up your asphalt and everything anyway. So you might as well center, have them come right down the Broadway. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be cut into these people. The more you can keep the people off the big trucks.
No, this is what I'm thinking too, but we'll have to look at it as we're going through this. Is it just using that part of First from there south and turning them back to Broadway after that? But we'll see.
You have to use First if you want to go west.
We're able to go up First Street. But we've already stopped that, more or less, except for local.
We'll see as we have these meetings.
Yeah, the only trucks that I see coming up First Street, well, there's two. The ones from west on 26, they're heading east on 26 to take a left on the First. They still have that left turn movement. You still have your right turn movement off going west on 26. and if they want to head south, because we are restricting the right, the left turn movement off 26 onto the spur. So any westbound trucks on 26 will have to go up first and then take a left on the on a loop.
To clarify, Mayor, there is no trucks allowed north of Scooting on first.
Oh, is that what it is?
Only south.
Yeah, that we had some kind of restriction. Just trying to remember.
They're restricted from north of Scooting on first. But anything south of Scooting is allowed in the truck route right now.
First Avenue between State Highway number 26 and Scooting. Right. That was done in 1993 was the last adoption.
I think we better review that as we move forward with this. See what people want to do.
Yeah, the trucking company off of Scooting. And then you have all those people that park alone. I don't know what that street is by Pro Build there. There's always trucks parked there.
On both sides.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's another point. If this becomes a major truck route, then right now, currently, it's signed. There's no, it's parking allowed on the side, and that would more likely have to go away to all the parking along the loop. Just for the trucks, you know, for all the traffic, that it would see an increase in traffic, truck traffic.
What's your time frame on this as far as actually
concerned? Like I said, we're just starting the design concepts, and this is where we've gotten thus far. The right-of-way process will take about a year. Funding, I believe, is 2012, so we could be out as early as late spring or early summer.
Okay, well, we'll have to get a couple of meetings scheduled and look at these corners, what we want to do for truck routes in that area. So, wow, that's a lot of real estate removed right there.
This is the big one.
Yeah.
Looking at this, yeah, there's right-of-way take, but it's not a significant impact to this parcel. Likewise with the gas station on the corner of Broadway and then the other place. It doesn't impact the property nearly like this does.
Yeah.
And I think this project in conjunction with whatever you guys decide on your truck route through town is a really key element to this project in my mind. So if you guys have some thoughts on that, we're all listening because this is your project and you guys will have to live with it when we're all done with it. So,
So financially, we're still looking pretty good?
So far, yeah. Just depends on... Once we start touching sidewalks and the ADA stuff, that's one thing that we haven't really got too deep in yet to find out how far do we have to go with the sidewalk construction, because the sidewalk basically stops here. There's disjointed throughout this little loop. You don't have a complete sidewalk system. So I don't know if we get on the hook for that with the money, the color of money. I haven't really gotten that far. So that's something we're looking at right now. So that would be something to drive the cost up a little bit. We're not planning on doing any repaving on Maluk Street. I think there's no money for that. We'll just, anything that we do in paving will just be in the corners, pretty much. So right now we're on budget. If we start buying a lot of right-of-way, that could be different. And in particular this place, for right-of-way acquisition on this, the Clearwater, yeah, you buy the land, but you also have damages that you'll also have to consider in the price, too. So it definitely impacts their business, their ability to do their business on that corner.
Bob, could you talk about the finances a little more? Where the money's coming from, whose project it is, because of the way the money flows?
Oh, boy. I'm a little fuzzy on that one,
okay,
to be honest. So.
But it's really the city project.
It's a city project coming through, I believe, local programs. Federal money through DOT to the city, and the city asked us to partner with them to do the design and construction admin, so
right.
We're basically acting on behalf like a consultant.
Right.
So it's our interest really is at the intersection of Highway 26 and First Street, and that's why we're most interested in is try to reduce those accidents.
Thank you.
Sure.
Ken?
Is that street going to be able to handle that added traffic and added weight and whatnot with that excess or extra knobs you got on there?
That I don't know. I don't have the road structure data to say, and I honestly couldn't tell you that.
I guess I'm asking, is that going to be the responsibility of the state or the responsibility of the city?
I believe that would be the city.
Okay.
Larry?
I have one more question on, say like on Ball Loop here, and if you had trucks going around corners like that, have you ever looked at the feasibility and the cost of concrete instead of asphalt in the corners?
Actually, that's a good question, because we're North Central Wash region for DOT. We're getting our first concrete intersection this year. I'm building one up in Wenatchee. They're definitely a higher cost up front, but you know, you're not back to repairing them all the time.
Right.
You know, the money's just simply not there for us with the money we have available right now to do a concrete.
Is it more expensive?
Yes.
Quite a bit.
Yes. There's a lot more upfront cost, but you have a longer life cycle.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the funds are just not there. Good question.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bob, for coming. We appreciate you taking your time to come down and speaking to us.
Sure, anytime.
Anyway, looking forward to the next couple of meetings that are scheduled. And
real important to get the local property owners that were impacted in here and getting their input. But like I said, the key part is the truck routes through town, especially with the Clearwater. So that's something that, however you guys work it, you just let us know for that matter. If we could, I would think if we could eliminate doing any work on that corner at all, it would be a really good thing, you know, for that property owner in particular.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Update on Well 6, Larry Julius, Gray and Osborne. Larry.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. Nice to see you all again. We have a real brief report on Well 6. Since last discussing with Council where we were, we've done a little more testing. The fluoride level at the surface is down to 4.37 milligrams per liter, which is good. It's going in the right direction. It's dropping. It's still a little bit high. 4 is the threshold for the state where we have to do something. We've talked to the Department of Health. They're aware of it. We're also able to pump 2,000 gallons a minute, which is considerably more than we thought we'd be able to once we had sealed off the bottom of the well hole itself. So good news in that we're at about 2,000 gallons a minute. We can sustain that. And fairly good news that we're down to a little over 4 on our fluoride level. The Department of Health said we could put Well 6 back into service right now, because they consider it an emergency well, which has been the label on it, I think, ever since it's been in production. We asked them if we get fluoride down below 4, if they'd reconsider that so it could be considered part of the city system, which would mean we might not have to drill a second new well in the future. They said it's possible. It's going to take some time and a lot of testing. Fortunately, fluoride tests are not very expensive and something city staff can do on a routine basis. But the kicker is the Department of Health and EPA are talking about lowering that threshold down below 2 milligrams per liter, which would be difficult to get with the well at 4. But there are ways around that. We're looking with public works staff at where that first contact is with the public. In other words, where the first service is coming out of Well 6. And we think it's at the corner of intersection of Main and that first street that Well 6 is on, I think is Hemlock. If it is, we might be able to turn the piping around coming out of Well 6, go west to Railroad Avenue, up Railroad to Main, and tie into the water main in Main Street, which should give us sufficient contact time, if you will, with the rest of the distribution system so that it commingles with the rest of the water that is substantially lower in fluoride. It's an idea we're kicking around. Been no decisions yet, and it's something that we need to explore a little bit more. Now, with respect to the well pump and the existing system, the bowls, the pump and motor, we just received the pump curve, which is a piece of data that shows the efficiency of the existing well in relation to the motor, the number of bowls that are used to suck the water up and all that. And we're working with the contractor to determine if we can reuse the existing pump and motor and the bowls the way that they're assembled now, because there's 14 of them, or if we have to trim down some of those or remove some of the bowls. We'll probably have a little more information in the next couple of days about that, and then be able to come to the city and say, here's our recommendation of what to do with the existing equipment. So far, it's looking good. The contractor is saying, worst case scenario, we probably have to replace the bowls, because once you drop down from 3,000 to 2,000 gallons a minute, it's a matter of efficiency. And there's a trade-off there. Do we spend the money now and have more of an efficient setup, or can we use the equipment we have now and just have higher energy costs without having to expend any capital? So we're looking at that. We should probably have an answer within the next few days on that. And that, if there's any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Amen.
Larry, you mentioned recirculating the water from 106 and then going back around and into Main Street. We're going to hook on before Main Street, so we don't have to dig up Main Street.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay, Main Street pavement. Don't sit down. I was...
Kids, talk to me.
Okay.
Has anybody seen that black stuff out there? Anybody tell me what that is? It's pretty cool stuff. I'm hoping the rain doesn't wash that paint away. The reason we're here to talk to you about Main Street tonight is because originally when this project came about, it started, if you recall, that it was going to be from 7th to the 14th. And at that time, we came out and did some tours of Main Street to see exactly how thick the asphalt was, what we thought we would need to do. Over time, the project became all of Main Street. And the information we were given at the time was that from 7th to 14th was the newest, the other half was the oldest, and it was much thicker there. Well, as we did the grinding and the trenches along Main Street, we found that that wasn't necessarily true. So here, a few weeks ago, we came out and did some more pouring of Main Street to check exactly what was there. And we found that between 3rd and 5th Street, there's about an inch less asphalt than there is on the rest of Main Street. So the impact that this would have to the city is that it would be ununiform and it may wear at a more rapid pace than the rest of Main Street. Now, we understand, the same as DOT, that you know the city is in the process of redoing their truck routes, and this is an ideal time to do that on Main Street as well, because it will increase the life of the asphalt on Main Street. Now, this doesn't take away commercial deliveries. One of the main commercial deliveries in that area is Commercial Tire. They bring in heavy trucks with a lot of big tires and stuff like that, so that those trucks will drive on this section of asphalt. Now, we just, you know, we're into the paving time, so this is the opportune time to talk about that. Should the city decide to add an extra inch of asphalt in that area to make it more uniform with the rest of Main Street, the contractors got some pre-leveling there already, actually most of it, he can still put the extra asphalt in there and blend it in both from the parking lanes in and in the east to west lanes, so there will be no bump, no hump, won't be a noticeable thing at all. However, we just wanted to bring it to the city's attention so they can make an informed decision on what's there, because we know the life of the asphalt is very important. The effect that this would have is approximately 450 tons of asphalt. Because of the blending process and the width of Main Street, that's the estimate that we've come up with, is 450 tons. It has about a $30,000, an approximate $30,000 impact on the project. That said, I'll be happy to entertain any questions.
Go ahead, Larry. Or, sorry, Ken.
if we were going to do this, shouldn't we have done it before we put this pre-level in there?
No.
Because what we're going to do, we're going to add the curve to that, and you're going to leave it at the same height at the curb line. So you're going to have a tapered effect. You're not going to have an even 1 inch across the whole street.
The contractor has done this before. It is going to have an effect, but they're going to taper it so that it affects the travel lanes the most, and then taper it out over a distance. So it's not going to be a set point where at 3rd Street we're going to increase it an inch, and at 5th Street we're going to stop it an inch. They're going to slowly taper it up, and then taper it back down. And same with the parking lanes. They'll taper it up where there's the least impact on the parking lanes until they get to their thickness.
So you're right, Ken, there won't be a complete 1 inch thickness all the way across and all the way along the profile of the lanes. But we'll hit the travel lanes and the turn lanes where the most damage could be done by slow moving trucks turning.
So you basically do that in the parking lane itself up to that point when you cross.
Okay, we had a contingency fund when this started. 60,000 or something? There we started?
I think it's about 56,900
right around there. Mm-hmm. So we're still sitting on around 30,000 we have not spent, correct?
That's correct. I think we've had three change orders that amount to around $28,000 to $30,000. So it would leave close to $30,000.
So are we aware of any other change orders coming at us? Do you guys know of anything? Everything's kosher and we're moving forward fine, or?
There is one more change order that the city asked us to find the cost or get cost from the contractor on. One, it's got three or four parts to it. One is to do some additional storm drainage work on the north side of Main Street between the canal and the railroad tracks. I guess there's some flooding that has gone on with that hillside.
Yeah.
Another is to redo the ADA ramps in front of the museum. The third item,
sidewalk.
Between 11th and 12th, where Rodney has his vacant lot, splitting the cost of that new sidewalk where there was none anticipated, since there was none there to begin with. And there is a fourth item.
CDHA,
thank you. Reworking the entrance ramp on 2nd Avenue to meet ADA requirements. So the contractor is putting together prices for us on that. We're hoping to have an answer this week on what that cost would be. Look at it, see if it's reasonable or not, make a recommendation then to staff.
And one we know is the flooding near flooding was about $6,400. That's the one we know. I don't think the others would be higher.
Sure.
Individually.
Yeah.
The ADA ramps about $4,000. We got a quote last year $3,500.
So that's in
the sidewalk. So that's where we are money-wise.
Yeah, we already set some money aside for the museum, the ADA ramp.
Yes, that is budgeted in a separate line item, and that's where that will be taken out of.
Yeah.
And that is $3,700.
Okay, yeah. And yep. Rodney's, he's going to pay half of it. Yeah. So that's a good deal there.
Could we use some of the stuff on Main Street, the sidewalk on between 11th and 12th, out of the sidewalk construction fund? Is there some left to that?
There's not much in there.
I think there's only about $10,000 left in there, and we have budgeted $1,000, so there is about $9,000 in that fund.
And that one, we don't have a minimum that we have to maintain on that money.
Okay. And if we share the cost with Rodney, I think he's paying the most of the cost.
The contractor quoted $9,200 and some change. Rodney's paying $5,000 for that. So our bill's $4,243. So we could pay that out of the sidewalk funds,
museum one comes out of museum dedicated fund. So it's just the $6,400 for the irrigation, the flooding issue, and the CBHA. So we could estimate that at $12,000, if you say.
$10,000.
So there's approximately $10,000 more to come out of contingency fund before the project can be completed.
Okay. That is one thought of using some of that money to help cover this. I think we'd be crazy not to do it. We want the whole project to last and last at least 20 years, I hope. But at least we'd like that, I thought.
It also depends upon the maintenance on Main Street after all of the paving is done and the contractor's long gone. If it's maintained properly, we could very easily see a little bit of difference in the longevity, the life of a couple of inches or 1 inch difference. We'll have between the existing asphalt and the new overlay 5.5 inches through most all of the route. If we don't do the 1 inch additional, it'd be about 4.5 inches through that section between 3rd and 5th. Is there a way to determine or quantify how much life expectancy difference there is? We could do some guesstimating, but Ken could probably tell you that's kind of like rolling dice. There's a lot of variables that go into that. There will be a little bit of difference. How much? Maybe a couple of years, 5 years? Hard to tell. And the city maintains it and comes through and does fog seals and chip seals and things like that over time. It could easily last until the next time the city would want to do grind and overlay, and maybe then would be another time to do it. But we can see benefits to doing it and not doing it. So we did want to bring it forward to council, so like Taylor said, we can make an informed decision.
Well, if we put up the no truck signs, except for local traffic, that should make a huge difference, correct?
Yes, that'll make a big difference. You know, a loaded 18-wheeler is equal to about 4,000 trips on a regular car.
Whoa.
So there's a huge impact to the asphalt between cars and 18-wheelers.
Several weeks ago, I asked the attorney to put together an ordinance for the council's consideration of banning all truck traffic on Main except local deliveries. She has provided that as of last week. The chief and Terry are now reviewing it, and we'll have that brought to you here shortly. So we're looking at doing exactly that on Main Street.
Okay. Questions from council? Other questions?
I guess I just got one quick one.
Go ahead, Mark.
On the what they're putting on now, they're going to put a membrane or some kind over that there's before they put the next layer.
Fabric called road grid that's going to go down, and it's going to over the entire width and length of Main Street, and then they're going to place approximately another two inches of asphalt over the entire thing. So that you see out there, it's all nice and good, but it isn't the final product.
And what they're doing is they're nailing it down, from what I understand.
Yeah,
so I guess one of the issues is when they lay the tar to help it stick, when they turn their wheels and stuff with the trucks, it causes it to roll up. So they're going to nail it so that doesn't happen. That's part of what they're doing. And
just so everybody knows, when they are paving, they are restricting all traffic during that time in the areas where they are paving. And when they get to the it will be the same way. But then it will be reopened each night to traffic. Asphalt doesn't have a cure time. It just needs to cool. So once they get it compacted and it cools, then they can open it back up to traffic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll also be keeping all pedestrians and everybody quite a ways away because you got trucks backing up, things like that. So
it's the most dangerous time of the
year. Yeah. So if you're a council member, it's not a good time to show up. Let's put it that way. So, you know, because it's really dangerous. There's a lot of movement, a lot of equipment. They can't see around very well. So,
today,
you
know. Even they had a car go through all their cones and pull right up behind the paper.
Oh, Okay. Okay, Larry, did you have a comment? No.
Well, where's it? You know, really, I just worked with the council that $30,000, I wouldn't gamble on it. If it's going to last 2 years, I would spend the $30,000 right now and hope to hell it lasts overall. But, you know, but you got to give it a chance. You got to keep it equal, or you're going to have some. If you have a problem in 2 years, then what? You got to get the contractor all back in here and repair that certain section. I'd say do it now and get it done. That would be my suggestion to the.
Eamon, you have another comment?
Thanks, Larry. I'm kind of going to go there also. You know, we spent over $6.5 million on this project. We started out by saying we're going to do it right, and to short it for $30,000 at the end, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But to go back to Councilmember Kaler's question, and Taylor, I just want to make sure we're clear, and that is the project started with a phase project, and it is pouring to determine the depth of the asphalt. And then as the project grew and became the full length of the Main Street, you relied on comments from staff on the thickness of the pavement and didn't do any coring until later on to determine if in fact it was short from what staff told.
Right, and we took it upon ourselves to go through that coring to Joseph after the grind and after the trench passes. We weren't seeing the thickness of the asphalt that we thought were out there.
Right.
More questions from council?
One more here, old guy up there. He thought he was going to get away here. I just kind of watching there today, you know, that looks great out there. That black stuff all down, and the rain so far hasn't worked it out. But I kind of question some of that stuff was alligatored out there, like we talked about. We were going to take some of that out. And what I'm talking about is little broken up pieces. It's like this size, and there's quite a bit of it. And as far as I could see, I didn't see you taking much of that out. You just went right over the top of it. So what's going to happen in that 3 to 5 years? I thought we were going to look at those areas very closely and do something with those before we did it. Sure, it looks great to go out there and blacktop this thing and do what we're talking about. We've got to look at that street before you do that.
We went out, the contractor, the inspector, myself, and Terry from the city walked the entire length of Main Street 2 weeks ago and looked at each spot. We stopped and looked at all the alligatoring or block cracking sections. And while some of the asphalt was broken up exactly like you said it is, based on the knowledge we had there and the knowledge that, and the research that we've done in our office, those areas that weren't fixed is old asphalt, extremely old asphalt that has become brittle and cracked. It's not due to a subgrade failure. Alligator cracking, you want to replace for sure, especially when it's at the surface. But we're putting 2¾ inches of brand new asphalt over the top of it. And then the fabric is in there to get rid of the reflective cracking. And that's going to, reflective cracking is when those cracks that are in the base come back up to the top. And the idea of this fabric is over time those cracks are going to come up, but then they're going to hit the fabric and go sideways. And then the fabric is going to last for so long, and eventually they'll penetrate back to the surface. And that's where the maintenance of the Main Street is going to come into play in order to get the longest life out of your asphalt. But we did go through and pick the areas out that we determined were obvious subgrade failures, where there's holes, where the asphalt is really popping out and showing that it's not good there. And you know, the only fortunate thing of going through a winter like we did was allowing all that moisture to get into those cracks and really exposing the serious subgrade failures, like up there at 11th, where you know I think your car even went through there and got stuck. That is a real subgrade failure in areas where it's just going to show, even if you were to pave over the top of that, it would just sink. And we didn't see that in the rest of the areas.
Why? The little I know about construction, well, I kind of question because, you know, it's well and good to pay over what we just done. But then, as you just said, it cracks this way, you've got a crack over here, that water comes down, follows underneath, you've got the difference between the two of them working together, and also get that water filtered back down into these same cracks. And I just hope that it don't telescope back and through. I've seen too much of it. I'm just kind of curious why it wasn't taken out. That subgrade is very important, as you know.
Yes, it is.
Other than that, it looks great.
Thanks.
Okay. Is that everything for council? Okay, thank you, Taylor. Okay. Review of OMC 17.61.010 regarding parking. Darrell?
Good evening, Mayor. Thank you, council. Nice to be here to talk about parking once again with you. You may recall back in October or so of last year, we brought forward some concepts in regards to parking regulations that in some cases would provide for additional regulation in parking, in other cases would alter some of the parking regulations that we did have, and sometimes we actually relax some of the parking requirements. And some of those were incorporated into our code and some were not. But it seems like every spring we begin to receive additional complaints about cars parking on people's front lawns. And that was a topic of discussion that we attempted to undertake and address back in October, but that portion of the code was not modified at that time. So I just wanted to take this opportunity this evening to again bring the issue forward, because we are receiving a number of complaints regarding that issue, or at least some discussion in the community regarding that issue. And I wanted to inform the council that we are in fact enforcing the code as it's written. And under 17.61.010, it's actually a provision in the code that applies to new construction. So if you were to build a plat or to build a new home in the city of Othello, you'd be required to provide certain parking requirements off-street. Among those are a room that's sufficient for at least two cars, that it be on an improved surface, and the code specifically identifies concrete or asphalt. And that you also have a garage that's capable of housing two vehicles as part of that requirement. So the code, as it's written, was intended to apply to those areas of new construction. And we are requiring those when new construction comes forward. So that portion of the code is being appropriately applied. Now, there may be some confusion in thinking that we also apply that to existing structures. And as the code is currently written, we do not. Because it's clear that there was not the intent of this section of the code to apply to existing structures unless they're modified in some way. And then, even though there's no specific identification of what constitutes modification or alteration, generally there's standards in the industry that you can apply towards that. So if someone comes in with a major remodel and substantially structurally alters their property, we treat that as new construction under this code and requires these parking requirements, and reasonable to do so. But for an existing structure, we don't apply these particular requirements that are found in the zoning code. And so we're beginning to see, now the snow's melted, you can see that cars are parking on lawns, and that gets people's attention this time of year, and that led to the discussion that we had last fall. Do we want to address this in some fashion? Do we want to impose regulations and begin to make people park in designated areas on their front yards, not on the lawns, but in a designated driveway or parking area? And to what extent do we want those parking areas to be improved? Is gravel sufficient? Does it need to be paved? Does it need to be concrete? So that's the discussion that really is before us this evening. Is it an issue that we want to revisit? Or do we just want to recognize that come spring when the snow melts, we recognize we see cars parked on front lawns, and it's just something that happens in established neighborhoods where the new rules have not taken hold? So we're looking for some direction from the council if you'd like to is to proceed along those lines. If you'd like us to bring back an ordinance that would address that issue, we'd be happy to do that. If you'd like us to take this back to the Planning Commission, I think they're anxious to tackle that issue and come forward with a recommendation. So we're looking for some direction from the council on how you'd like us to proceed. If you're happy with the way things are, that's great. We'll continue to enforce our regulations as they're written and explain that to folks as they make comments. Or we can certainly look at additional regulations that could address the issue. Because
I myself, I think we need to change it. I mean, I see a couple houses where there is cars from one end of their property to the other, and a couple deep even in their front yard. And one of them's parked in their front yard with the boat connected to it and the tires on the pavement.
You may recall we brought some photographs last year during our discussion that showed a number of examples of front yards that had as many as 6-7 cars located in the front yard portion of the structures.
I guess I'd like to see go back to the Planning Commission myself and then see what they bring back to us so that we can start discussing this again, see how we want to proceed.
I think it needs to be addressed too, but I think it should go to the Planning Commission and see what they recommend.
I'm not sure I didn't start this, but in my consideration, your front lawn is not a parking, not a prepared parking place. And strangely enough, winter's over now, and there's no snow around, so that you don't have to stomp through the snow and stuff like that. So now we park on the grass, and there, you know, there's 4 or 6 on the grass, and it makes a mess, like you say. I mean, there's, you know, motorhomes parked out there, and there's cars with boats attached to them, and stuff like that. And it, obviously, they have to be driving over the curb, which is, I believe, against the city. So, I think the Planning Commission needs to take a look at it and come back with something else. You know, I kind of was under the impression that what we talked about would be to every place in town, but evidently it was just new construction. And what gets me, I guess, I find it strange that people with alleys have backyard access, but they park 3 and 4 cars in the front yard on the lawn. But then I drove down the alley one day and through the little bitty cracks in the thing, I could see why there was no car in the backyard, because it looked like that one up there on Larch and between 9th and 10th that is same thing, same situation in that backyard. You couldn't have got probably couldn't have got another washing machine in there. But anyway, I agree with you. The Planning Commission needs to take a look at it and see what they come up with. Some recommendations anyway.
Excellent. I think we have a consensus that we'll send this back to the Planning Commission and come forward with a recommendation on this issue. We'd be happy to do that.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darrell.
Thank you. We cannot enforce what we're hearing from the council and the citizens, the complaints we're hearing. So thank you for allowing us to bring it back to you so we can bring something that we can't enforce.
Okay. 2.06, ceremonial scissor rental policy and procedure. Debbie.
We recently purchased this pair of gigantic scissors to be used for dedication programs or grand openings. And during this time, we found that other organizations are in need of this. In fact, McCain Foods wants to use them in a week or two. So what we did today was provide you a copy of a policy and procedure for checking out the scissors, and we are proposing a $20 fee, and that will help cover some of the costs for the purchase of the scissors. And we know of other organizations that do want to borrow these too.
They are real scissors.
Yeah, they are.
They are sharp.
They're sharp.
They are sharp. They will cut.
They are sharp.
Yeah, I cut some paper with them. They cut the paper real easy.
So we'd like to put the policy, the proposed policy, on the consent agenda for next council meeting.
Any questions from council?
No, you can't borrow them to trim your shrubs with either.
Mayor offered to cut hair, everybody in the
front office, but all the ladies took off running, so that was the end of that one.
That wasn't what your barber did, was it?
No. Oh, man.
So any questions for Debbie on the policy?
The policy as written with a $20 fee?
Yeah, looks like bring her back, it looks like.
Do you need to put something in there to be returned in the condition in which they were taken out? You know, and if you get them dented and bent or something like that.
That's pretty much covered.
Doesn't say they have to pay for that.
We'll make sure we have that.
Just said they have to be back in 3 days, but nothing about the condition.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thanks.
Okay. Committee reports. Do we have any committee reports? Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Last week I was up outside of Spokane on the ways. Went to Inland Northwest Partners. I'm kind of tying the two of them together here for the city and also for ACDC, kind of represent both of them. But that's a pretty interesting group. It's a group that's tied in with the western part of Idaho and eastern part of Washington. And it has some pretty unique things that go on there. This time was a little bit different. They were talking mostly about forestry and mining, so I didn't figure that was a great deal to do with us, a little bit maybe as far as our gravel and things like that, but they were into gold mining and silver mining and the price of gold and everything has started a new influx in the mining industry. One problem they have is all the people that are educated in that field are all retired age, basically. So the people that are coming out of college, they're starting college now into the mining business, but they're going to be 4 to 5 years before they actually get a new group or new regime coming into it. So it's kind of a unique thing that's happening in that industry. All of a sudden, there's lots of things to do in that part of the world, and yet they don't have qualified people. The mines more or less shut down over the years and whatnot. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out in the long term. A couple other things they talked about as far as the way the economy has went to. Bottom as far as the U.S. is concerned was January of 2008, and everything is slowly progressing and growing again and coming back up on top. Two major things is it's hard to borrow money, and the other item is that the housing and construction portion is on the bottom end of the field, so that's affecting a lot of people. And we're lucky that we don't have that particular problem right at the present time around our area. As far as agriculture is concerned, they're on the upgrade, you know, your wheat prices are up, your cattle prices are up, beef prices are up. So we probably won't see that big drop like so many areas did. I think we're going to kind of come out here and dip a little, because we always run a little bit behind the rest of the country in an agriculture area, so I think before it drops clear down to the bottom, it's going to pick back up other places, and that's going to help us. And I hope it helps ACDC and everybody else. Kind of an interesting thing, in the state of Washington, you know, you heard of these underwater mortgages and whatnot that a lot of people are in. I know there's a lot of young people in it, older people and whatever, are having a real problem with it. The house is not worth as much as what they've been borrowed on. And they're talking that over the average, a house today is about the equivalent of a house in 2003. So, I mean, that's how much has changed. Your inflation really dropped again. In the state of Washington, I think it's about 16.8% of your mortgages are underwater. The overall U.S. average is about 23.6 or 8, somewhere in there. State of Nevada is 65%. So, I mean, that kind of tells you that we're still below the average of what's going on. So, you know, it looks bad, and we keep talking about how bad things are, but it's worse than other areas. So. But that's what this Inland Northwest is all about. It just kind of gives you an idea of what's going on in the economy and what's happened in our areas. And Roger Crew went with me, and we're always pushing about our gas and a few other items that we need in Eastern Washington. And I think through that group, we might be able to put some leverage on some of these items. Vista is quite involved in that area and as a partner, as they are in electricity and gas, I think we can put some pressure on that in that direction and maybe get some results. I don't know. We're trying to plot a course here to make things happen. So.
Good.
It's well worthwhile, I think.
Thank you, Tim. Ken, for your time. Committee reports and the others? Okay, unfinished business?
Yeah. If Councilmember Johnson and Darrell would allow me, I'd like to speak a little bit about the pool committee, just to bring the rest of the council up to speed.
Okay.
The end numbers from the pool expenditure fund, we don't really get until after the pool closes, which is in August. We don't have numbers until September, October. It was realized last October when the numbers came together and we shared with you during the budget process that there was overstaffing in the concessions to the tune of several thousand dollars. So we talked about that at council. We brought it to the pool committee level, two different meetings. The first meeting, we realized what the problem was. The second meeting, the pool committee, along with Mike, our finance director, Terry, resolve the problem by reducing the staff, putting everything back in the parameters of the budget for this year. So this year, we've solved the problem. Last year, got out of hand, even though the employees were punching a time clock out at the pool, and I've been looking at that. So I'm further investigating what the problem was, but just so the full council knows, there was an issue. The pool committee and Mike and Terry have solved the problem for this year, so there should be no budget expenditures out of line for pool concessions this year. So thanks to everybody for helping us get through that.
Any other comments by committee members? Nope. Pretty good. Okay. All right. Unfinished business. New business. Okay, I'd like to thank Councilmember Mark Snyder. He volunteered to participate in the scholarship committee. Mark Spohr has stepped down from that, so Mark will be. Thank you for doing that for us, Mark. Appreciate that. And unless there's some, mayor's announcements. OMC code books need to be updated. Please contact Rebecca Dover this week, so if you have some, she'll need some of those. Don't do like I did. I collected about four before I finally turned them in. They were wondering where they're at. Adams County Fire District Number 5 has their biannual meeting on Tuesday, April 12th at 7 p.m. at the fire station. Council members Spohr, Snyder, and Garcia. That's a week from tomorrow. Mayor's Luncheon is a week from this Wednesday, April 13th at noon at the Senior Center. Corinne Fields from the Othello branch of the Mid-Columbia Library is a scheduled speaker for this luncheon. So everybody's welcome if you want to come. The Teamsters mediation potentially all day on Friday, April 22nd in room 3 at City Hall. Council members Deaver, Kaler, and Darrow. If you have any questions, you can get a layman on that one. Any other announcements, Dan?
I won't not be able to beat that, so that'll leave you too, I guess, unless somebody else wants to stick their nose in.
If somebody else had a conflict, we could change it. I have a conflict also, but I was going to try to work around it, but I'd rather not.
I will be out of town Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so be back in Monday afternoon.
Right. So if you'd like, I could reschedule. I'd try to reschedule that. It would benefit the Deaver and myself if we could.
Is there a better day? Yeah.
I think it'd benefit the city if you were there. So I don't know. It's up to the rest of you. But I can't make that.
I'll see what I can do about it.
Just don't do it Friday of the next week, and I'll be out.
Okay.
Okay, any other
Tuesday, Thursday?
Any other announcements, comments? Okay, this meeting's adjourned. Thank you, everybody, for coming.